Hi everyone, my name is Yarrow and you're listening to the Making and Mending podcast. I am so excited to bring you an interview with the wonderful Chaney Williams today. This is my first interview episode, as I will mention later, in about 9 months, so it feels really special and I'm so grateful to have a guest that brought so much beauty and depth and realness about what being human is like these days to our conversation. And I really hope that you love listening as much as I did. It was really beautiful. I don't have a ton of updates. I've really enjoyed the Stitching Together community in the last 2 months. It's been such a steady and nourishing and loving creative space, and I'm so grateful for the people who joined. Our theme for January was getting into slow stitching, and then for February it was finding confidence with color, and for March it is mending as a ritual. You're still welcome to join. You can look at the material for the last few months in your own time if you wish, and there are 3 live sessions per month that you can join and work on your own project. So yeah, we would love to have you. I'll link to it in the show notes, and for now I'm gonna let you listen to Chaney. Hi everyone, I am so happy to come back to recording with a guest I have been wanting to speak to for a long time. And as you might know, if you've been listening for a while, it's been a minute since I had a guest. I took a long break for about 6 months last summer, and then I kind of came back with solo episodes. And now I'm so incredibly grateful and excited to talk to the beautiful Chaney Williams. I'm meeting them, I think, at a really interesting point in time, and we've been having a few chats via email. She's also in my Patreon group, and we've just been kind of reflecting about, you know, the wildness of life. I really love Chaney's Substack so much. There was one particular piece a few weeks ago that spoke to me so much that I reached out and said, oh, maybe, you know, can we talk for the podcast? That would be so great. And Chaney said yes, and I'm so grateful. So Chaney is an incredible writer. I highly recommend checking the Substack out. But Chaney also is a lot of other things, such as a ritualist and a doula, and I'm sure we'll hear more about how all these different things weave together in a moment. But Chaney, thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited to speak to you.
Thank you for having me here. I'm excited to be here for this conversation.
So do you maybe want to start by telling us a little bit more about your creativity and your practice and where you're at in life right now?
Yes. Okay. So my name is Chaney. I'm a former student midwife, which I feel like is a good segue into like what I'm doing now. Writing has always been a really big part of my life and my creative practice, but I became a full-spectrum doula in 2018, and that kind of shifted my practice, especially when I got into a CPM, like a certified professional midwifery school, and that was like the track I was going to be on, and I had wanted to do it for like 10 or 15 years, like since I was 14. And then very suddenly in November 2021, I had an accident with a semi-truck where they hit me on the highway and fled. So I would say like my creative practice now has been really healing for me. And it's changed from my big form of like medium I worked with was writing creative nonfiction and poetry. But after my accident, I really dove deep into fiber arts, and that's where I am now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. That's a huge life change. And I'm glad you shared that and felt comfortable to do so. As you know, I also had a big accident 3 years ago that changed my life. So I'm just so grateful to speak to people who, yeah, know that kind of, you know, things can change in a heartbeat and literally in a second. And
yeah,
it really just changes how you think about your life and your body and the work that you're here to do. So yeah, I'm glad to be in that experience with you.
I am too, because like what you were saying, it's very, not a lot of people get the experience. It can be very isolating, I guess you would say.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to write a zine about it and just kind
Yeah.
of write and know that
I
other
love that.
people. Yeah, I also feel like I would like it more people just generally to know about shock and accidents because
Yeah.
I didn't know much about shock before this happened, and you're kind of suddenly in it and you're like, fuck, I have no script. Like, what
That is
is
so big and real and resonates with me because I
Yeah.
think because my accident like yours was so sudden and I wasn't expecting it, like I didn't even see it like coming while I was driving. So in like a lot of ways I'm grateful for that because my body wasn't tense when the accident happened, but it was really shocking after. And it, continuing until now, like it's still shocking, it's weird to think about, and it doesn't feel very like it happens sometimes, honestly.
Yeah, I relate to that too. Yeah, it is bizarre, and I sometimes wonder, like, wouldn't it be good for all of us to just kind of read about what shock can be like in all kinds of ways so that maybe our bodies, recognize it in some way, at least from stories we've heard. But
Honestly, if you have resources on that, send it to me because I
yeah.
haven't really dove deep into it. Like,
Yeah.
literally on the scene of the accident, they like asked me how I was, and I was like, I think I'm in shock. And I knew that,
Yeah.
but I've never gone into like research about shock, which I think is something I've like forgotten as part of it. So thank you for helping me remember that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, absolutely. I will definitely email you if I come across any good resources.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think what's wild also is that we both had this experience within kind of a wider global experience that was also so shocking, right? So
Yeah.
if open to it, I would love to hear a little bit more about what lockdown was like for you and how your creative practice has changed over the years. And you touched on this a little bit already, saying that you shifted more towards textiles. And I would love to hear what that means to you in this moment, kind of thinking about
Okay.
lockdown, how you spend your time there, and what does it mean now to hold thread in your fingers?
So for me, lockdown was very shocking as well, but also kind of a different experience from other people because I was in midwifery school, which was entirely on Zoom at the time, which is wild because how do you do that on Zoom? But I was also in an apprenticeship where I was learning all those skills and I was really lucky. But like I have been at births for like days sleeping in a mask, which I think is something that people haven't really experienced, like being in a hospital setting or even a home birth and just like have never taken the mask off and like fallen asleep on like a couch because you've been up for like 2 days with your mask on. But
Wow.
I think, yeah, it's really wild. And like I hate this, but I'm one of the few people who still mask up in public where I live. I'm saying I hate that because more people should do it. That's just my opinion because we have to
I
protect each
agree.
other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's an isolating part about that as well because I also have a couple other disabilities other than the chronic pain. I'm a type 2 diabetic, so I'm very high risk if I get COVID. So that's like a thing for me that I'm always thinking about. And I think it's been not everyone gets that, I guess. But I would say my practice has really saved how I form connection and community, especially in virtual spaces, because that was not a thing that existed before really lockdown. Like it was very rare. And I think that is one. The only beauty of the pandemic is that there are more virtual spaces for people who do have differently abled bodies and like chronic illness and stuff like that. So that has really been the place where a lot of my textile and fiber art practices formed, being in community spaces with other people. And like it's really helpful because a lot of the times I can be like homebound because I'm having a pain flare. And that's something I never experienced before my accident. And so I'm really grateful for my quilting, which is what I do, and like embroidery. and I'm starting to get into weaving, which is exciting. But like those practices I can do in an accessible way from home or my bed.
Yeah, I was just nodding along here. I totally agree
Yeah.
that it is a really beautiful thing that we have more online spaces now. And I think also they've become more accessible in themselves, and that we all have become more used to talking about difficult stuff, be that mental health or pain or disabilities or isolation even. I feel like before the pandemic, I was attending online spaces, but I had higher expectations of myself. I was like, I'm gonna be
Yeah.
on video, I'm gonna sit upright, I'm gonna do the homework, you know, I'm gonna ask great questions. And now I'm like, you know what? Sometimes I'm off video, sometimes I just had to cry because I'm in pain, but I'm still there, and I'm so grateful that we can still connect and we can just all cut each other a little bit more slack, hopefully, you know?
Yes, that's very relatable, 'cause like I think when I first start joining online spaces as well, I was just like, I have to look a certain way on camera. And now it's like, I'm going to show up in my pajamas because that's how it is today. And that's what I need to do for my body. And I may have camera off. So I really relate to that as well, because I think I had like really, like you were saying, high expectations of how I should act on Zoom or other virtual spaces. And that was, I wouldn't speak a lot because I didn't want to look like silly or like people judge me. And now I'm just like, I don't care. Like, this is how I'm showing up today.
Yes, yeah, totally. And yeah, I really relate to that. I think also sometimes being homebound and that not being predictable is hard. Like, you know, it's not that we know, like, oh, every Monday and Tuesday, I know I'm going to be homebound, right? That's not how it works. And
Yeah.
I think you, or for me, I really felt like I had to resource my home in a way that's like, even if I'm in a really bad flare, I still feel like I'm engaged with the world in some way. Like I have a bookshelf, for example, with like secondhand paperbacks of fiction that I feel excited about that I haven't read yet. And so
Love that.
if I have like a social plan over the weekend and I need to cancel it, then I go to the bookshelf and I pull one of those little books out as a treat. And I'm like, okay, I'm staying home, I'm staying in bed, but like there's still like a little thing that's happening here for me. And I feel the same with online groups, a lot of the time, where it's like I'm far less social than I used to be, but there's still exciting stuff happening and we can still connect and inspire each other, and that's really nice. Yeah.
You can't see my face, but when you were talking about like your nonfiction treat bag, I had like so much joy on my face, and now I'm like thinking about things I would want to put on like a bookshelf or like bag, so I can just have that really easy accessible, because that's such a great idea. Because I think one of the things I struggle with sometimes is being like, what do I do now? Like, if I have to miss an event or even like an online event, I'm like, I don't know what to do with myself. So I
Yeah.
love having like that readily accessible source of joy to be like, okay, this is my treat. And I love that.
Yeah, I really love that too. I've become so dorky over the years about like tiny home improvements. Another
Yeah.
thing I really like is like I have a hand sewn drawstring bag that's kind of like nailed to the
Ooh.
wall next to my bed, and it
Okay.
has a bunch of it has basically two embroidery hoops that are already threaded, and like there's fabric in them, and the thread matches the fabric, and blah, blah, blah. So even, you know, when I have a pain day and I would like to do something with my hands, as you know, sometimes it's just too much, like to find the hoops,
Yeah.
find the fabric, thread the needle, you know, like, oh my God. And then you just don't get started. But I now have this little drawstring bag next to my bed, and I can just reach into it and start stitching. And I kind of try to really set myself up on good days so that it's easier on the bad days, basically. Yeah.
I love that. Something kind of similar I do with that is like, because I do quilt and I do all my quilting by hand, like even the quilt top. I have like, when I do have a good day, which I set myself up for success as well by cutting out a bunch of blocks and I put them all in a plastic bag. I don't thread my needle though, and that's such a great idea. because that is something that I think really slows me down. But I love that idea. So I'm thinking of like new things, like I was saying too, to like add to that process.
That's we should totally have a zine about like tiny disability home hacks as well, right?
Yes, I just had like the biggest like excitement face on my like look on my face. So I was like, yes, we need to do
Yes.
that.
I have another question about your day to day.
Yeah.
I would love to know what kind of rituals do you have at the moment? And they could be tiny, tiny, but like,
Okay.
what do you like at the moment to do as like a special moment in your day?
So, I'm trying to think of which ones to choose because I have several, but like my big one is morning pages, like from the Artist's Way in the morning. And I always drink like my coffee or a cup of tea with it. And I sit out on like my parents' sun porch because I've been at their house a lot while I've been dealing with the pain stuff. And it's really beautiful out here and there's a lot of natural light. So I'll just do a very slow morning while I'm waking up and I'll do my morning pages, which is three shorthand journal pages. And then whenever I do write, I always light a candle and have a glass of water next to me. Or just something like a mentor who was also a writer and like kind of witchy as well suggested to me. And that's been really great and helpful. And then the other one is I always take a bath at night because I'm a Cancer, like that's my sun sign. And I love water. Like it's my favorite, it's where I feel most grounded. So I take a bath at night as like a little treat, as long as I'm in a flare and I can't. As long as I'm not in a flare and I can get into the tub. If not, I'll take a shower. But yeah.
Yeah, I love bathing too, and I love candles. These are good things. My next question is a little bit further out, but I know you're into it, so that's great.
Cool. Okay.
I wonder what your ancestors are whispering into your ears these days. Any thoughts?
The big one, I love this question, by the way, because I love ancestor work. That's something I've really dove in deep into. It's probably since 2020. But my big one is like I have like this like affirmation or intention I say all the time. And it's because I had a dream about it where I was at a family reunion, which is interesting because my dad's family does really big family reunions like a whole weekend. Usually around the 4th of July, they're doing their first one since before the beginning of the pandemic, since before lockdown this year, which I'm excited for, but there's usually like 200 people there. But in the dream, I was like at a family reunion and there was this group of elder women and they were all in a circle talking. And like when I approached them, like they didn't talk out loud. But they told me like through their thoughts, which sounds odd, but like that's just how it was. I understood, but they were like, trust in your magic, trust in your intuition, trust in yourself. So that's something I like come back to a lot. And it's like a lot of the time my ancestors are affirming that I should trust myself. That's something I struggle with a lot. And that's something because of trauma has really like warped in my brain. So that is like the thing that is always coming up from my ancestors is that I can trust myself and my intuition and my magic. And yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Dreams are so beautiful, and I also need to remind myself to trust myself more all the time. I think, yeah, the world is literally set up to discourage us from doing that, but it feels so
Yeah.
good. It feels so good to just like sink into my body and be like, no, like I trust myself. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing, like I try to remind myself is like I know what's right for me because I'm the person living in this body and like making a home in my body, which is like a whole thing I will constantly be doing like my whole life, which is something I know. But yeah, that's something I'm working on as well, is like reminding myself daily that like I can trust myself because I know what's best.
Yeah, I love that you brought that back to the body as well, because I think if you have more complex conditions or an
Mm-hmm.
accident, whatever it is, you're just suddenly interfacing with so many medical professionals. And it's like, it can be very
That.
confusing, right? That so many other
Yes.
people have an opinion on your body and get to touch you and get to like X-ray you and measure you and do all these things. And you're like,
Yes.
what?
Like a thing I've been talking to my therapist a lot is like I have honestly a lot of trauma from like the medical system, which like I always knew was a thing because as a doula and like a student midwife, I knew that was a thing. And like I've known from my own lived experience. But I think because of the accident and like a couple other things that have happened with my health, I've really had to advocate for my body and myself in a way I necessarily shouldn't have to, which I'm sure you possibly can relate to. But that's like been a whole thing about like trusting my body and like my bodily autonomy that like it belongs to me. Because even like I think it's wild because people don't know they can say no to certain health, like everything with healthcare, honestly. Like you can be like, no, I don't want to do that. Or like, no, that's not what's best for me. I'm leaving, et cetera. And I think that's a really big concept I learned as a birth worker and like student midwife is like, you get to have informed consent about that stuff. And like you were saying, that's something people don't really want us to know, which, yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I
Yeah.
went on a whole tangent about
No.
that.
Yeah, no, I love that. I totally agree and relate to it. Yes. And I also needed to hear that reminder that it's okay to say no sometimes, or even just to ask for more time to think about it. I think
Yes.
there is this dynamic of scarcity where you, I mean, it will be so different, right, where you live, but in here, like the NHS, it's free at the point of access, so we're paying it through taxes.
Okay.
But then there's this like really deep scarcity where sometimes it will take you so long to get just an appointment with your general practitioner. And then if you need to be
Yeah.
referred, even longer. And then when you are being seen, you get like 3 minutes. And so I think there's already this setup of like, oh my God, like this is such a precious resource. And I'm getting this little moment of attention here. Like, how dare I say no to what is being suggested to me, right? Or like, how dare
Yeah.
I say I need a little bit more time to decide? But it's so empowering to remember that you get to take time and, you know, read up on it and just say, you know, I'll be thinking about this and I, yeah, but this is a big decision and I need a little bit more time. Yeah.
And that's wild to me. It's the same where you are, where I am, which is in Kentucky, which is on Turtle Island. But like, it's wild that it's a thing where it's the accessibility to getting in to see just your general practitioner and then to see getting a referral and all that. It takes time. And it's totally what you were saying. Like, it feels like the time is very precious. And you're like, when am I going to be able to get back in? But I think like the big thing it's really taught me as well as like the birth work stuff is like being like, do I have time, even in like a birth setting of, do I have enough time to for you to come back and for me to make a decision later? Or is this urgent? And like, I'm really grateful for that lesson because like, I never really thought about that before, honestly, because yeah, I just hadn't. But yeah, the preciousness of like getting in to see a provider is so real. So I'm glad you brought that up as well, because like I didn't think about that honestly a lot.
Yeah, but I love what you said also, and I'm so happy people get to hear that. I feel like we're really covering a lot of ground today, but it's such good ground. It's such good fertile ground. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to talk a little bit more about textiles because I feel like I can feel
Yes.
this like beauty and depth in your writing, and you're clearly thinking so richly and like expansively about grief and joy and pleasure and how these things coexist and what do we do with the anger and you know how does it express itself through the body and through our art and then with textiles there's this beautiful thing where humans like through time have always had this deep intimacy, you know, like being wrapped in cloth as we're born and like often being buried in it. And now we are here in this in-between space,
Yeah.
trying to hold thread and like piece things together. I've seen some of your quilting practice and I really loved it. And I just would love to hear more about What role does it play in your life? Like, where do you see that going into the future? Are you working in a quilt at the moment?
So this is the thing that I always like come back to is I have always wanted to quilt and weave since I was like 13. Like I went back and like this is kind of silly, but like when I was in middle school I had a live journal and in high school, like do you know what that is? Did you have a live journal too?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, okay. So mine is still up and just like there in the internet land. And so I looked back at it like maybe 5 years ago, and like I talked about there was this like prompt that someone had asked, which was like, what is your dream life when you're older? So I was like 13. And so I like made this whole vision of what I wanted, which some of it has changed. The big part that has not is that I wanted there to be a loom in my home that I knew how to use and like I made things with for my family and my community. And so I feel like in a lot of ways, fiber arts and like the act of slow making has really brought myself back to my body, but also to the person I've always known I want it to be and I'm becoming, but also like my ancestors. Because on both sides of my family, I come from people who were quilters. My mom's family, there were quilters, people who crocheted, people did tatting, and we have all that still. Like we have preserved quilts and like tatting from like the late 1800s. So I've always known I wanted to be involved in that practice because it makes me feel connected to my ancestors. And it still does. And so my big thing was like when I was younger, even though I knew I wanted to learn, I didn't have access in like rural Kentucky to learn from people. And the people in my family who did it were not living anymore. So the other great thing about the internet is that I was able to find communities where I could learn from. And my big practice right now is my quilting. Like I was saying, I quilt by hand completely, including like the quilt top. I finished my first quilt last October. I started in January of last year. And it took me kind of, there was like a learning curve to it where like I think my brain, when I learn something new, is very into perfectionism and there's a lot of fear around it from how I was raised. But learning how to quilt and teaching myself was so freeing because like I didn't have expectations. I did it alone from like YouTube videos and books. And it meant a lot to me to do that by myself in a way that felt good and I took my time. So right now I'm working on my second quilt top, which is an improv quilt. And I have like 25 blocks. I just started a couple weeks ago. And I'm making it for my great aunt Betty Jean, who's like 95. Well, she'll be 95 this year. It's a birthday present. And when I told her I was making her a quilt, she was really excited. And she was like, I'm so happy you're doing this because my mom and my great aunts did this as well. And it feels like you're honoring them. And honestly, that made me happy cry. But yeah, sorry, that was a really long explanation, but that,
No,
yeah.
I loved every second of it. Thank you. I'm so happy that you have that connection and that you have grateful family members who are so excited to receive your work. And I totally agree, like this, the intimacy and solitude of like teaching yourself and being able to have all these resources. I mean, I know YouTube can be overwhelming as well because there's so much, but also like this patience with yourself and just knowing yourself to be a perfectionist in some ways, which I totally am too. But I also feel like in a lot of areas in my life, in the past, I was like, no, if I can't do it well, then I don't want to do it. And I think when I
That.
came to Texas, right? Yeah. When I
Yeah.
came to Texas, I was much more like, oh, this is fine, just see what happens. And especially working with recycled materials, I talk about that a lot because I have this big hesitancy of like cutting into something precious or ruining some paint or whatever. But with recycled textiles, you can just play and you can make such beautiful things. And I think especially improv quilting is so liberating. Do you maybe want to say a little bit more about, for folks who don't know what improv quilting is, like what does it mean to you?
To me, okay, so my first quilt top was a 9 square quilt block patch. So, like, it was very different from improv quilting because each square had to be a certain size and I had to cut them all to be like perfect, which literally was so overwhelming to me. And that was, I realized really quickly that's what was my block was, is like not being able to like not have, I had to have them be perfect, the blocks to match up with other ones. And so that was really overwhelming to me. But improv quilting is so freeing, I feel like, because like I'm reading this book. I hope I say her name right. It's Sherry Lynn Watt. She's a improv quilter.
Yes, I have
And yes,
the same book.
you
Yes.
do. Okay, I love it. And like I got it last year when I first started quilting, but I wasn't ready to get into it yet. So I was like, I need the foundational skills before I start doing this. And so I love it because she talks about using scores, which it feels really freeing to me, where you set like a limit or two for yourself, which like on this quilt, my limit is like the amount of colors I'm using and also the different sizes of the blocks. And they don't have to be perfect. Like I just kind of like guesstimate, and I use a rotary cutter, which I like a lot too. And then I do the, what's the, do you, what's the one where it's like cut and rip? I do cut and rip too, which is really helpful, like for the fabric. But it's so freeing because I don't have to, it doesn't have to be exactly perfect. Like it is perfect in its own way though. And that feels really freeing, not having to use like a ruler to cut every block a certain size, because that is not for me or my brain.
Yes, same. Yes, I've never followed a pattern in quilt
Yeah.
making, and I would find it really overwhelming too. So I love that book so much. I can highly recommend it. I think it also
What
does
is it
show.
called?
Is it called
I'm
just?
trying to. What were you saying?
I think maybe it's just called improv quilting, but it's
I
definitely.
think it is too. I can, but she's amazing. Her stuff is so amazing, and I love her work.
Yeah,
Yeah.
me too, so much.
I love reading it
Yeah.
too.
Something I like also about this idea of like, okay, there's lots of freedom, but then you create these little rules for yourself is that they can carry so much meaning. Like, I made a little quilt which is hanging over at my desk at the moment, last year, where it's like all beige and different shades of beige and like clay pink. And then it has like one tiny little square of like a brighter pink velvet. And I'm calling it having a crush, where like the whole quilt is like little curvy, dreamy shapes where you're like, I've just woken up and like everything's kind of a little bit hazy and soft. But then I remember this crush I have and it feels like this little bright spot of pink velvet,
I
So
love that.
yeah, that's nice.
Also, if you are ever down to share a picture, which I also get if it's something that's like a private ritual thing for you, I get that. But I would
No.
love to see a picture of
Yeah, absolutely.
it.
Let's exchange more pictures of our makings.
Yes,
Absolutely.
I would love that.
Yeah. Janie, I know you're in like a real point of transition in your life at the moment, and then also it is just a lot to be alive these days, as we said when we first got on the call. But I wonder, what are your dreams at the moment? Like, what would you like to, yeah, how would you like things to unfold if you could make any wish?
My wish for like everyone, like the whole collective, including myself, is like a sustainable future for all of us. And not just sustainable, but like a future where we're all thriving and we have access to everything we need and are safe in our bodies and where we are everywhere. Because I hate to use the word we live in a hellscape, but we live in a hellscape right now. But I have a lot of hope for the future that I see in the communities all around me and the work people are doing. And that makes me hopeful. That makes me very hopeful. And despite of all the darkness that there is and like the grief, That makes me hopeful, is seeing the work people are doing, including like children. Children give me so much hope because compared to when I was a kid, they have so much more access to learning about different ways of life and identities and just all these things. And like the younger generation is what gives me hope for the future. So my dream for all of us is that we as a collective, we live in a sustainable future where we have what we need and we don't have to beg for it.
Yes, absolutely. It's so simple in some ways, and sometimes it feels so
Yeah.
far out of reach, but I love that we're carrying that in our hearts regardless, and I feel the same. I'm so inspired by kids as well, and just feeling hope about, yeah, how storytelling has become so much more common and like w more widespread, in that like I feel we're
Yes.
all connected to stories that are much more different than our own life stories now. And that is so good in breaking down barriers and really
Yes.
nurturing solidarity between people from different backgrounds, identities, you know. Yeah. So
Yeah.
yeah. Oh.
That's what excites me. That's what excites me despite living in this hellscape.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chaney, I could talk to you for a whole lot longer, but I also want to respect your time, and our little brains are like,
I know we're
I
just
love
like going back and forth, and I love it. I
it. I
love
know,
it.
me too. So I want to ask you though, before we go, firstly, I want to know if there's anything else you want to share, anything at all about your observations in life, like what you pe want people to know, what your body has been teaching you. And then I would also love to know more about the work you're doing and where people can find you if they want to connect with
Okay.
you.
So I think like the big thing I thought about. It's like my body has been teaching me how to be patient. Like I've had to do like a forced stop on all the things I used to do in a way that was without my consent. But my body has really been teaching me to nurture and like give it what it needs. 'Cause used to I really avoided being in my body. And I'm really loving being in my body, even when it feels upset or grief or rage, which are things that used to be really scary to me, I would say, like letting those feelings out, but like feeling the wide spectrum of emotions and like letting myself fucking feel it is amazing. And like it's really taught me that like I can do it. Like I'm safe when I do it too. And then I guess this like goes into the work I'm transitioning into. Like I'm in a big shape shifting like phase of my life right now, where before I was doing a lot of like reproductive justice work, and now it's really shifting into grief work, which is something I've always known that I would do, but especially with like the memoir I'm working on, which is about ancestral grief and like generational trauma, but also like the reckoning of my identities as someone who's biracial. I think it's brought up a lot of different forms of grief that I wasn't aware of previously. So I've been really diving into ritual as well. And right now, the places you can find me are on Substack, which will be in the show notes. And then my website, which I had a lot of resistance over doing. Like, it's been something I've been working on for like a year, but I'm glad it's out in the world. And I'm sharing it more. And like, one of the things I'm starting to offer is like ritual and tarot reading over different like ritual and grief work. And then also, hopefully, I'm hoping it'll be out in like the summer. I'm wanting to do a container for people who are queer, trans, and BIPOC about ancestral grief and joy. And that's called Maroon, which I'm really excited about. And I'm just trying to figure out what platform I'm going to do it on. But yeah, that's all.
Yes, I was again nodding along. I relate so hard to what you said about being patient, you know, being taught patience by your body and having these like Oh, moments of like, oh yeah, it is actually safe. It is actually safe to listen and to slow down and to feel the more difficult feelings. And in some ways, that makes me feel more alive. And that is like a real gift.
Yeah,
I think that's so
it
hard to
is a
talk.
gift.
Yeah, right. That is so hard to talk about sometimes, I think, with pain or chronic conditions, because I would never like want to spiritually bypass something
Yeah,
or suggest to someone that, you know, have you tried yoga or whatever.
I know that makes me so mad.
I know. Yes,
It
I
makes
agree.
me really mad, and like,
Yeah.
I'm like, have you tried leaving me alone? Because that's
Yes,
not helping.
exactly. Yes. And at
Yeah.
the same time, I think you are totally right. There is also this feeling of gratitude. And like, I feel too, like I've been totally stopped in my tracks by my accident. And I would have never ever slowed down in the way that I had to since. Like, my accident happened on New Year's Eve 2020. And I was in 2020 thinking, like, I'm making space for grief. You know, I do all these things. I'm, you know, valuing my solitude. But if I'm really honest, I was like pushing so hard, doing so many things in 2020, and it was really like, nope, no longer.
No longer. And that's something I really relate to too, is like it's made me think about how I spend my time and energy and resources and the people I surround myself with as well, because I need people who get it, and like I get them in that way too, and they can understand that sometimes I'm not going to be able to show up in the way that I normally would. And like, I'm not spiritually bypassing either, because that's really gross and icky. But because it has made me, in a way I really don't like, have to like totally look at my life, that is the only gift about it, because I've really had time to be like, okay, because you have to right now, this is what is important to you. And like, having that reflection has been like the saving grace, I guess, of it all. But still, like, it's not something I would want to happen to anyone else at work. So I'm just trying to make that clear. But yeah.
No, I get that. Thank you. Also, I want to say I'm so excited that you're writing a memoir, and I'm so beyond excited to hold it in my hands one day. And I'd love to have you
Thank
back on
you.
the show. Like, if you want to talk about your writing and when it comes out,
Yeah.
yeah, let's promote it. That would be amazing.
That would be lovely, and
Thank
thank you.
you so much, Tani, for your thoughts and your time and the beauty of your practice. I'm going to link everything in the show notes. And I'm so grateful that you've been my first guest in a really long time. So thank you.
I'm grateful as well, and I'm so excited we got to talk
Thank
more.
you.